Everybody, J.J. Cooper, Carlos Colazo, another Baseball America Draft podcast here as we are every week. We just rolled out updated 2027-2028 college rankings, so check those out. Top 100 for 27, top 50 for 28, fully updated with, you know, to reflect everything that we've learned, everything that's happened over the course of the season. But today, before we get done with the 500, we're updating the 500 with reports that's in progress. But before we do that, we're going to take a moment to talk, kind of playing off of a piece that Carlos wrote earlier this week. We're going to look at some players who have a stat that might be concerning, and then we're going to kind of examine it and decide how discerning it is. So Carlos, kind of great to see you. And I'll kind of start by, before we even get into the players themselves, but is there a stat or are there a couple of stats or metrics that you look at when you're kind of, as we're deep in draft process, where you're like, if I see something like that, that is a statistic that carries more weight to me than maybe others do. Obviously there's more than one that jumps out to you.
Yeah. I'd say in general for hitters, contact rate is a big one for me. Like, I feel like that is maybe the trait of hitting prospects that feels the most innate, whereas the least able to be helped in some capacity in player development. Like if at a certain level, if you can't clear, I'm not exactly sure what the threshold is, but a certain level for contact ability as an amateur, then I start to get very concerned about you being able to then improve on that number in pro ball against better pitching. And I would say for pitchers, for me, walk rate and throwing strikes is a pretty significant one. I just feel like among our staff, at least, I feel like I'm more bullish on pitchers who actually throw strikes at a high level, both in pro ball and as amateurs. So those are two that jump out to me. And then I'd say for pitchers in general, the kind of one statistic I always look at as a bit of a bellwether, I think it's one of the better single statistics just to see, okay, how dominant have you been, especially college pitchers. I think strikeout minus walk rate is one of my favorite individual statistics. So those are some of the numbers that I am particularly honed in on, I should say.
So, okay, well, we will dive in. And the first one that we will start with is really tied to the piece that you did and something that is near and dear to my heart, because it is tied to a study that I did last year that involved going back into every year of the archives of Baseball America and all, which is TCU outfielder Sawyer Strohsnyder is hitting .272, which 300 batting average is an arbitrary number. It's no different than .295. 305. It's how the human brain works at a 300 is it. But if you set that dividing line at 300 for college first round hitters, not many fail to clear that bar. And the track record of those who have not has been pretty frightening over the year. You're going to be kind of the prosecuting attorney and the defense attorney here. So lay out the case for and against why this should be a concern for Sawyer Strohsnyder.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say let's start with the concerns, because I think that's fairly obvious. I mean, like you said, this was built on a study that you did a year ago when you were looking into Jace Laviolette. He was having a down offensive season, his worst offensive season in his college career, which otherwise was pretty impressive. He slides the 20s to the Guardians, and you looked at, hey, like, what is the actual success rate of college hitters who hit under 300 in their draft years? How have those players panned out or been as pros? And the answer is not great. When I was kind of refreshing this piece, looking at players like Sawyer Strohsnyder, and there were two others as well, if you want to read the full piece at BA, Justin LeBron and Ryder Helfrich are also players that I think are going to share these concerns moving forward. But there's basically four players, I think, that have been successful big leaguers. Three of those players were successes before the turn of the century. The fourth is Patrick Bailey, who's been one of the worst hitters in the major leagues and mostly carries his value because he's an elite defensive catcher.
And was just traded, basically dumped by the team who had him. Was like, you are a gold glove catcher. You're the best catcher, defensive catcher in baseball, but we don't want you anymore because you just can't hit.
Right. And so I think for amateur players, I think batting average still carries a lot of value. Even though it's probably not the best statistic to use to measure value for major league players, I do think it is incredibly useful for amateur players, because if you can't hit or you're not putting up impressive batting averages, as an amateur, I just think that that is putting a lot more pressure on your profile. You're going to need to make significant adjustments with your offensive ability, or you're going to need to have massive value in your secondary tools like Bailey. And so it's a concern. Sawyer Strohsnyder, when he was a high school player, the reason he didn't rank higher than he did when he was on our BA 500 coming out of high school was because he had pure hitting questions. He had really impressive physical tools. He had raw power. He had big arm strength. He was a great athlete. And then I think his freshman year with TCU, he really came out of the gates. I mean, he hit 350, 420, 650, really impressed, had a lot of doubles, homers, triples, steals, just was really filling the stat sheet. And this year, I think there are some things you could point to and say that you like and some that you're scared about. I mean, the average is significantly lower. It is nearly 80 points lower from a season ago. That has come with a different approach. His walk rate was 8% as a freshman. It's jumped 10 percentage points to 18%. I think the approach he's shown is an improvement. At the same time, I think there are still going to be real concerns about what is the overall quality of his hit tool at the next level. Teams who are really into Sawyer Strohsnyder, I think, are the teams who really prize and covet and value physical tools and upside in athleticism, because I do think Sawyer Strohsnyder is in this elite tier of players in this class in terms of secondary tools and upside if he hits. But that's a really big if for Strohsnyder at this point, I think you kind of have to say.
So a couple things with that. One, to go back to your point on batting average and why I think it's important, I'll give you an example from pro ball that I think is, but it's also draft related, that I think is apt, is that if you think back a couple of years ago, we were getting questions all the time of like, how are you not ranking Tamar Johnson in the top 100? Look at what he's doing in high A. And Tamar Johnson had very high on-base percentages, and he had solid slugging percentages. And you could say from that, it's like, well, on-base percentage is way more valuable than batting average. So why are you dinging him for his batting average being low? And this is where there's a difference between, I think, if you're what you were talking about, between the major leagues and development, which is if you are a passive or a very patient hitter, anywhere on that line of passivity, and you are facing pitchers who are wild, you can post really high OBPs.
Right.
If you're posting a high OBP with a low batting average, the success rate, and I've studied this, the success rate of that in pro ball, I haven't looked at it at the college level, but in pro ball, the success rate for those players is much lower than someone who's posting a high OBP with a high batting average. Mm-hmm. And the reason being is that the high batting average does matter. That is an actual indication more of your hitting ability than, you know, the one that kind of was formative for me. There was a former USC Southern Cal outfielder, Mike O'Neill, who posted like 430 OBPs, mm-hmm. 450 OBPs in Class A. And talk to any scout about him, it's like, yeah, he just goes up there. He's like 5'7". He just goes up there looking to walk. And that worked for him in A ball and up to double A a little bit. And they got triple A. And it's like pitchers who still can be wild at times, but could throw strikes enough. They didn't respect him. They just go through strikes, and it all fell apart for him. Well, Strohsnyder, though, to me, is a fascinating one here because the batting average, in a lot of ways, to me, like Jace LaViolette's batting average last year made sense with what he was doing, right?
Right.
He had real contact issues in the zone last year.
Yep.
Sawyer Strohsnyder, I'm not saying he is – he's no Nick Madrigal. You know, he's not someone who, like, you cannot get a pitch by him in the zone
right.
or anything like that. But he's not someone who is excessively striking out. He's not someone who's just, you know, okay, well, he hits the ball 500 feet.
Right.
He's not Jack Caglione was for much of his career in college. This is the guy who has much more, you would say, like, you would think that he would hit for a higher average than this.
Yeah.
But
and he is,
it's not.
Yeah. What's interesting too is he is a left-handed hitter. He runs pretty well. He gets out of the box well. Like you said, he doesn't have the egregious underlying contact questions that maybe Jace did. He doesn't have the extreme chase tendencies that Jace LaViolette did. And I think those are, like, if you want to take the bullish side of Sawyer Strohsnyder, those are the traits that you'd point to and say, okay, maybe for whatever reason, he's just gotten unlucky on some of his balls in play. But you look at the overall contact rate, it's not horrible. It's not great. It's 74, right around 74, 75% overall contact rate. The end zone rate is 84, 85%. The chase rate is under 30%, which again, I'm not going to say that Sawyer Strohsnyder is some elite pitch recognition
those numbers aren't
expert,
great.
But those Let's numbers are not, those numbers are not in the, like for context, Jack Caglione had a chase rate of 40% in college. Like, I feel like when players get their contact rate, and in college, I do think the overall contact rate is a little concerning when it's under 80%. But there are players who are legitimate draft prospects who the big swing and miss question players is like the upper 60s is when it's like massive red flag. So I do think Strohsnyder is concerning. You want him to make more contact than he is. But the point you made too, he's not striking out a ton. His career strikeout rate is right around 18%. I think that is a perfectly fine rate to be around, to have confidence that he's not going to be one of these huge 30% plus strikeout hitters in pro ball.
I'll just point out also that Laviolette's contact rate last year, 71.2, and in zone contact was 79.4. Those are worse than Strohsnyder's, but they're also Strohsnyder's are not like that much better than them either. It's again, this is one. Okay. So let's have like Carlos on the scale from flashing red sirens and, you know, woo, 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 worry to I'm not worried at all. What is your level of concern about this stat, this characteristic for Sawyer Strohsnyder?
I think I'm not quite at flashing red flags. I'm somewhere in between the middle or top end of the risk. I am more concerned than I would like to be because I really am a fan of Sawyer Strohsnyder. The batting average this year is concerning to me. I think the where I take some heart is I do think that his contact skills and his chase rates aren't at the extreme worrying end. He is a career 314 hitter in college. We haven't done an extensive study on like overall collegiate batting average, but that average is quite a bit better than Jace Laviolette's career batting average, which gives me, again, makes me a little more optimistic that he can make some changes to improve it moving forward. So I would say if it's like a 1 to 3 scale of risk that you're throwing out, I would be like at a 2 or a 2.5. What about you?
3 being high risk.
Three being high risk, yeah.
That's where I would probably be 2 is 2.5. Like,
yeah,
some player is going to be the exception to this under 300 rule.
Right.
Like, I know that that's going to happen. But at the same time, it really was eye-opening going through this. I expected it to be like, oh, there's a higher failure rate among these guys. But when you looked at it, and the flip side, by the way, we didn't lay it out in that first study as closely, but the flip side is also true. If you wanted to say, if we wanted to be, the flip side of this argument would be like a Jaron Avicula argument, which is, can a guy whose tools are modest overall, but is hitting 420, how indicative of that is that for a guy who's, again, you have to be in this range of you are a top talent, right? There are, you could 100% go through the NCAA batting leaders over the years and find a guy who hit 430 at a small school and never was heard from. But I'm saying if you're among draft prospects and you hit well above like the 358 over the course of the entirety of this study, 358, I think from 2001, or I think it is to now, or something like that. 258 was kind of like the average. That was your median batting average of a first round pick, college outfielder, first
358.
Round, college hitter, 358.
Right. Okay.
But if you are, so under 300 puts you well below that. But if you're well over 400, it also puts you well above that. And the success rate for those players was dramatically higher than, and again, so I would say, 2.5. Okay.
Okay. Cool.
That's our first stat that we're looking at. We're going to dive into the best pitcher in the class right after this quick break. So, Carlos, we're back. And the next up is the stat is UCSB's Jackson Flores, 25.1 K to BB percentage, which is simple enough. Take your K percentage, take your BB percentage, your strikeout percentage.
It's so odd hearing you say BB percentage. Yeah strikeout rate percentage. Minus walk rate.
Yeah, strikeout rate minus walk rate. And then that's what the number is. And so tell us, okay, for those who don't stare at these numbers as much as we do, start with 25.1. Is that great? Is that terrible? Is that somewhere in between?
Yeah, so I don't think it's terrible, first of all. I think it's a really strong number for a college pitcher. I will say that number falls quite a bit short of the best mark of some of the elite college pitchers that have gone in the first 10 picks in recent drafts. And it also falls quite a bit short if you're just looking at the college pitching leaders this season. So for instance, if we're looking at qualified starters this year, guys at the top of the list, Camden Clark, Dax Whitney at Oregon State, Mason Edwards at USC, they all have strikeout minus walk rates in the 34.5 to 36.5% range. Jackson Flores at 25.1% is quite a bit off that mark. And I pulled all of the, again, this is top 10 selected college pitchers going back to 2021. There are 14 pitchers, if we're including Jackson Flores, who we very much expect to go in this range, 14 total pitchers who meet those thresholds. Jackson Flores' strikeout minus walk rate, where would you expect that to rank? I know you've looked at the numbers. I was going into it concerned that it was going to be the worst rate, is how I will tell you this. But it is the 11th best of this 14-player sample. So his 25.1% rate clears Gabriel Hughes in 2022.
He was the
10th overall pick, 25%. Chase Dolander, 2023, 9th overall pick. He was at 23.5%. And then Cade Horton is the worst of this sample of players, 2022, 7th overall pick, 21.1%. Strikeout minus walk rate.
Big asterisk on that one, though, because Cade Horton basically kind of worked his way. Like he was the, okay, the season kind of just going along, and then all of a sudden he found a rocket ship right at the end of the
right
season.
But even that number is even less than I was expecting it to be, because Cade Horton had a phenomenal close to the year and vaulted himself up into top 10 status. And I'm honestly surprised the strikeout rate was as low as it was. He's actually the only pitcher of the sample that didn't have a strikeout rate north of 30%. But I would say this, like, group, so the leaderboards, to give you context for like what the elite numbers have looked like, Chase Burns and Paul Skenes are the two that cleared a 40% rate, right?
Okay, you have my attention,
sir. With Chase Burns, 40.9% with Paul Skenes. And then it goes in descending order, Hagen Smith at Arkansas, 38.3%. Liam Doyle last year with Tennessee, 34.3%. And then we start to get like into the lower 30s. But I think two things are true for me. Jackson Flores' stuff is better than his strikeout minus walk rate indicates. Like, I think part of the reason why the strikeout and walks for him have been harder to stomach is that because he is the clear-cut number one pitching prospect in the game, because he is also not pitching in a great conference, I would expect him to be racking up much more dominant numbers than he is. It's not like he is a pitchability sort of guy who's not going to miss a lot of bats. His walk rate is actually maybe getting towards the range where you get a little scared in this territory. I don't think it's actually to that degree, but like, he's not an elite pitchability type in the same way that Tyler Bremner or Paul Skenes was at the same time. But yeah, I'd say that, like, going into the study and looking at recent track record, I really expected to be more concerned, but the names here actually give me a little bit more confidence. But what about you? Where are you at?
I'm concerned about this. Yeah. Like, I would say, again, to go back to, if I want to, I can argue both sides of this, right? I could be a lawyer on this. He's being asked ideally to try to be pretty efficient, go deep in games, all that, right? And so you could say, okay, well, maybe that reduces his strikeout rate a little bit. But to go back to what you just pointed out, he should be just carving up some of these lineups he's facing. Like Mason Edwards, to give an example you cited, like Mason Edwards is facing obviously not exactly same lineups, but they're both on the West Coast. There has been some cross-pollinations of the teams that they face and all. Mm-hmm. And Mason Edwards is carving up teams left and right. Now, Flora has the ERA that is exceptional. But to me, if you asked me, which would I rather see for a top of the draft college pitcher?
Oh, 1,000%.
1,000%. Yeah. So I am a little worried. Like, really, as much as the walk rate concerns me, and the walk rate is a little bit high, like I would say the walk rate is basically what Liam Doyle's walk rate was last year. And that was not like Liam Doyle's best attribute by any stretch of the imagination.
Right.
And his strikeout rate is like, for that, like, it's, if it was one or the other, if it was like the walk rate's a little high, but he's also striking out 45% of the, okay.
Right. I feel like both numbers are a little bit more, and I don't want to say they're not mediocre numbers, but for this caliber of college pitcher,
they're pedestrian, they're
not,
for this
exactly branch. for this group of pitchers, like both the strikeout rate is not as gaudy as you would like, the walk rate is not as high, and I also think just comparing and contrasting Jackson Flora and Tyler Bremner, I think is interesting because, and maybe this is just because Tyler Bremner was in a much more loaded group of arms surrounding him who had more obviously explosive stuff in certain categories. But Tyler Bremner, for his career at UC Santa Barbara, he never struck out fewer than 30.2% of batters in a single season. He never walked more than 6.9% of batters in a single season. His career K-minus walk rate was 26.4%. It was 29.7% his draft year. Jackson Flora, he only just now this year got his strikeout rate over 30%. His walk rate for his career is right in line with the walk rate he's showing this year. He had 12.2% in 24, 5.5% in 25. And then this year, it's kind of threading the needle between those two numbers. But it is interesting because I feel like if you're comparing Tyler Bremner and Jackson Flora, Tyler Bremner feels like the more pitchability-oriented arm, and Jackson Flora is the guy with tons of stuff. A fastball, exactly how you draw it up, multiple breaking ball shades, this new great changeup. Like, I think maybe the breaking balls is the area where you could say Flora is more exciting in terms of his future potential than Bremner. But Bremner has a better track record of just striking guys out and dominating in this area to a degree that I think gave me a lot more confidence last year and is kind of making me scratch my head this year with Jackson Flora.
Especially, kid, go back to the point, like, there just aren't that many. If I scan through, Synergy allows you to kind of look at every hitter that a pitcher has faced in the year. You're just getting names. But like the thing that stands out is there are very few names on the here's who Jackson Flores faced where I'm like, oh, let's see how he did against him. Because they just really haven't faced a lot of elite college hitters this year. Doesn't mean they haven't finished good, you know, good competition or anything like that. That's not what I'm saying. But it is true that it's like, okay, how many top 100, top 200, top 300 prospects in this year's draft have they faced? And it's not many. So again, I would just expect with Flora's fastball, for instance, right?
This is, yeah.
There should be 2 to 3 batters per lineup probably where it's just like, if you just locate that, they're just sitting down. Like,
yeah, I think metrically, analytically, the power, you look at Jackson Flores' fastball and it's exactly what analysts want to see for a fastball. And then you look at the actual performance against the fastball, in particular, the miss rate. The miss rate on his fastball this year is quite a bit worse than it was a year ago. And the reason I'd say I'm like not entirely scared by this is I think a lot of where Flora is maybe not getting this dominance is because I just think his execution is not as good as it's going to be in the future. I've talked to a lot of scouts who just think Jackson Flora is a little bit more raw than pitchers like Tyler Bremner were in terms of their pitching ability, their command. I think as he gets more reps with his pitch mix, which is completely different than it was a year ago, as he gets into better development, not to say better development, UCSB does a really good job with the pitchers. They're one of the best. But I just think with more time, I could envision a scenario where Jackson Flora does a better job landing his pitches in areas where they're going to play and the numbers are going to follow. So I would say my concern for Flora is probably like a 1.5, a little more towards the less concerned range of our scale. How about you?
I would put it around there too. I would agree with you. Like, it's what I would say about this is not a, oh, this is disqualifying in any way for Jackson Flora, but it also is, I would say, very much fits the idea that don't think that this is, okay, you're getting a guy in the top 5, top 6, that you're getting the next Chase Burns, or you're getting the next, no one thinks you're getting the next Paul Skeens. That's a level that very few, but you're not getting this guy who's going to go out and 2 years from now just carve big league hitters, which Chase Burns, like, throw Skeens out. Chase Burns is doing that. Chase Burns is going out there and dominating big league hitters on a pretty regular basis. I think this is more of, I like how you said it. Like, when you think of what we thought of Bremner last year, right? Where you're like, Bremner may be more of that mid rotation guy down the road.
Yeah.
This is probably more in that category. And maybe
I agree. I think maybe, if people think that the top college arm or the top arm in any given draft is just the top of the rotation prospect, I don't think that's the case. I think Jackson Flores is very much a solid middle of the rotation upside arm at this stage. I mean, maybe he unlocks some more things at the next level and improves, but yeah, I think your expectation should not be that Jackson Flores is an ace.
Okay, so let me ask you this way, though. One other with that. Is Mason Edwards, because of his ability to miss many more bats, does he have more potential, not to be an ace, but to be like a higher ceiling guy, even if he's not?
I don't think so. I think it'd be the opposite. I think Flores' stuff is just better. I think there's more ability to project on him. I think there's a level of power to his fastball that is going to allow him to access more ceiling. But Mason Edwards has been really, I think Mason Edwards has basically done what you would have expected Jackson Flores to do, which is dominate a weaker schedule of pitching or of hitters all year.
Well, we got one more of these that we're going to do. We're going to go to the high school ranks now. And so now we are looking at one of the top high school prospects in this class, Jacob Lombard. Last summer, we're going to note, we'll talk about this, but last summer he had a 32% miss
rate. This is actually his entire high school synergy miss rate.
High school synergy data. So encompassing multiple, you know, numerous events over the years, but you also have kind of similar data that you've gathered for other hitters as well. Mm-hmm. Okay. We already talked about, we already set the stage here that you get into the 60s of your contact rate in college, you're starting to get concerned.
Right.
This is obviously the concern with Jacob Lombard. We don't have to explain to you that that's not the miss rate that you wanted to have for that. Right. For that. But take us through how worrisome is this, and again, the pros and the cons.
Yeah, so this one is pretty scary for me. I basically, again, like I don't know that batting average is all too useful for high school players. I think almost all of the high school players that we're ranking are going to put up impressive batting average numbers. The quality of contact is so divergent that it's hard to put as much stock in high school numbers, period. But I do think given the travel ball scene, the showcase scene, pulling a lot of the summer data that we have available with a larger sample is useful. And there have been some players who, once they clear a certain threshold, you start to worry a little bit. And so what I did for Jacob Lombard is I tried to go back and look at top 15 high school hitters. So anyone selected in the first 15 picks going back to the 2021 draft. And I would say 2021 is when you start to get into a range where the sample is a little bit less all-encompassing. Both because synergy was a little bit newer on the high school side then, and because a lot of those guys went through 2020 where they just couldn't play as much. But if you look at the totality of miss rate for all the data we have for players, top 15 high school players, Jacob Lombard's miss rate is the second, I'd say he's tied with three other hitters for second worst, behind only Elijah Green. In a 23-player sample, Elijah Green had a 33% miss rate in all of his synergy data at the same time. Jacob Lombard has a 32% miss rate, as you mentioned at the top, along with Blake Mitchell from the 2023 class, and then Jordan Lawler, who I wasn't entirely sure if we should even include the 21s because Lawler's sample is quite a bit smaller. 99 pitches compared to, for Jacob Lombard, 1,266, Blake Mitchell, 503, Elijah Green, 603. And so for me, I look at these names and I get very scared.
That's a flashing red siren. If you say, like, cause Elijah Green has had one of the worst contact rates in the minor leagues, period.
Last time I checked this season, I think he's striking out almost half the time, like nearly 50%.
And it's basically derailed his prospect status, is he does not make enough contact. And then Blake Mitchell goes back to what we were talking about at the start, when we were in the Strohsnyder conversation about the guys who get on base but don't hit for average. Blake Mitchell is like the class A poster child of those. He is a catcher, but he is a guy who is, I believe, like a 220 career batting average, even though he has a very robust on base percentage.
And then you look at some of the other names at the, like, more near the extreme. So these are all the players with a 25% or higher miss rate in high school, include Elijah Green, Jacob Lombard, Blake Mitchell, Jordan Lawler, Steele Hall from last year, Bryce Rayner from 2024, who JJ just wrote about some of the swing changes that maybe he needs to make. Ethan Holliday, Brady House, and Benny Montgomery. Benny Montgomery is just shy of that threshold. He's at 24%. But like those names, they don't give me confidence. They actually add more more hesitation for me personally. And then on the flip side, if you look at some of the high school players who have been taken who have some of the better contact rates, it's JoJo Parker from last year's draft with just a 10% miss rate, Jet Williams in 2022, Max Clark in 2023, Billy Carlson in 2025, Connor Griffin in 2024, which I think is useful.
That shocked me.
This is useful to see and remember because Connor Griffin, he did have a lot of like pure hit questions and swing questions, but he never had the sort of pure just miss questions that some of these other guys like Holiday and Elijah Green and Jacob Lombard have. A few other names to mention here on this side. Eli Willits, 14%. Him and Connor Griffin had the same rate. Jackson Holiday in 2022, 15%. Harry Ford, Walker Jenkins, Daniel Pierce. Those are all the high school players in this sample who have a contact rate of 80% or better in the samples we're looking at. And I think overall, that's like a pretty encouraging group to be in. If you had to choose one bucket that you'd like to belong to, it certainly wouldn't be the big swing and miss guys.
So, okay. This is interesting you brought up Griffin here because I was stunned to see that Griffin's miss rate was 14% because you always hear about like, you know, how much he improved and how much the hit tool concerns there were and all that.
Right.
Okay. How much Lombard has had from our reporting, like it's been a better high school season, started slow, but it's gotten better. How much is like, again, on the rate of concern meter, if three is the flashing siren and one is like, I'm not concerned at all. It feels like you're sounding like this one's maybe it's not a three. It's like a 2.8, 2.7.
Yeah. So the only thing that prevents me from going to a three, and I don't know if this is foolish or not, you can tell me, but like his spring has been really good and everything about Jacob Lombard's game looks good. Even when he's swinging and missing, it looks good. I don't know if that is foolish to say. The swing aesthetics are really impressive. The bat speed is impressive. Mechanically, it's not like he has a lot of moving parts and the timing seems off and like the pitch recognition is terrible. You could maybe come back to me and say, hey, because of all of that and he still has this miss rate, you should be even more concerned. And I think that would be a legitimate argument to make. Additionally, Jacob Lombard is like this elite defensive shortstop who really runs and has power and has speed. I won't fault whoever takes him inside the top 10 for taking a shot on it because I just think if everything clicks and you can help him make the adjustments, like continue to make adjustments moving forward, if he needs to make them, maybe he's just the athlete that's able to do that. At the same time, if you wanted to look at just the track record of hitters in this range and say, nope, we'll let someone else take a chance, I get that too. So I'm like 2.8 with him. And I typically am happy to take risks on high school shortstops with tools, but I think like you just it's rare to see a miss rate this high in high school. That concerns me.
It ties back to what we were talking about at the start of this. It's all kind of come in a circle, right? Which is if you have a miss rate, you said at the start, I said what stats are the ones that you look at? And you said contact rate is the one that you look at first, because to go back to what you're saying is that's probably there are multiple things that are encompassed in that, right? In contact rate, which is pitch recognition to some extent, because if you swing at a ball that bounces at 55 feet, then you are going to have a problem. It's barrel control, because if you recognize the pitch perfectly, know exactly where it's going to go, but you just don't have the ability to put the bat where you want it to go, that could be a problem. And then timing, because we always think of it up, down, you know, in, out, all that. But I always love to talk about it. It's a three-dimensional space. Yeah. And if you are early or late, that can be just as much of a problem. And timing, I think a lot of times is often the toughest thing to probably fix in a lot of ways. That is a stat that it, again, like you said, like the thing that stands out to me is of the guys that we are comparing him with, these are up the middle players in general, but I would say like, of the shortstops we have there, I think that Lombard is a better shortstop. And if you're comparing him to a center fielder or a catcher, I would have less concern with the great glove shortstop doing this. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would say that it is something where it is definitely what I would say is it's very much a concern. I don't know how you can't call it a concern. Mm-hmm. The other thing I would ask with it is like, you said, like when you watch his swing, the part about it that seems weird is this is not someone who has a swing where you say recognizably, this is why this is
right. Yeah, I watch a lot of Jacob Lombard swings, and I don't know, maybe it's just like he's not getting his, I really don't understand what the issue is. Sometimes he can get a little bit steep in the swing. Maybe it's as simple as that, like try and get him a little bit more level so the barrel stays in the zone, the hitting zone a little bit longer. But yeah, I'm not entirely sure what the issue with it is. It's almost a little Ethan Holiday-ish. Like Ethan Holiday's swing always looked pretty good in high school as well. He just came with miss concerns. Yeah, I'm not entirely sure.
I will point out, just to, for completion's sake, Eric Booth Jr., who's the other, like, well, you know, I wanted to add, like, who's in that same range as Lombard. You know, Grady Emerson, I know without even looking up, is going to have a better miss rate. But Eric Booth Jr., 679 pitches, 20% miss rate. So to give a comparison of a guy who's right there in the kind of that same range of Lombard is another guy who, if you go through every event he's been to, it's right in what we would term the middle, I think, of kind of.
I'm curious now to pull up Grady Emerson's just to see, because Grady Emerson maybe for some teams has a 70 hit tool. I think pretty clearly the best pure hitter in this class at this stage. So just to give you some context for hits.
17% and it's 1,058 pitches.
Nice.
So he would be in the better than normal, but not at the absolute elite version of it.
Yeah.
JoJo Parker being the 10%er, that was not one I expected.
It's not a name you would have picked.
Clark, I would 100% like believe.
Eli Willits or Holiday or Clark. Yep.
Those are the ones that need. Well, that is today's Baseball America Draft Podcast. We thank you as always for the download. Please, you know, leave a comment. We try to respond to them. I know there's one out there from last week that I'm going to get to. I wanted to ask Jacob Rudner to help out on that question, because it was the college question. But also obviously check out all the stuff over at baseballamerica.com. For Carlos, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.